Welcome to
Ray and Tay Today, talking sports with friends.
Ray and Tay Today, talking
sports. Sports radio on the dial. Check us out. We'll make you.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Give us a ring. Let's join the show and talk some sports. 718-664-9098. Like always, hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Ray, we got the Urban Daily audience joining us, and we thank you to them and all the Radio 1 affiliates. And we got a special guest. Let them know who we got.
Yeah, we're going to talk hoops. We told you we'd talk some hoops, and we've got it for you. Today we'll be talking NBA draft and college hoops with basketball guru Seth Davis of CBS Sports and Sports Illustrated. You probably know him from CBS's coverage of the tournament. He's a big fanatic. He went to Duke, so he knows all those Duke guys. And
he's been with us before. He's the best, man.
He's got some good content.
Talking NBA free agency, man. Yeah, he's a straight shooter. Listen, hot off the presses. Go ahead.
Josh McRoberts, what do you got for us, hot off the presses?
Well, listen, they say he's promised the Heat, $23 million, 4 years? I don't know.
In year three. Is that a big deal? Does that make LeBron stay, or does that make LeBron just say, oh, well?
If that's your side piece player, you can't get Dang and you can't get Gasol, Josh McRoberts, not bad. Maybe I would have preferred Byron Mullins. But McRoberts plays the 3 and 4, can score. He got busy for the Bobcats last year. But the Rockets have made an offer, 4 years, $80 million, the max, $20 million a year to Chris Bosh. Is the big three, is it over, Ray? Is it over? Oh, my gosh.
It might be. It might be. And it'd be interesting to have the final nail in the coffin be Chris Bosh, because you figure he was the number three guy. They were calling him 2.5 men. That's not even right. But he was basically the third member of the big three. But if he goes to Houston, then I think it's over, unless they can go get themselves a Kevin Love. But if Bosh leaves, then and Wade's knee isn't right, then I don't know. That big three is in trouble.
Right, and there's opens the door for maybe Melo to go to Miami, which is an option that people haven't necessarily discussed.
I
know you have issues with that.
Theme.
I know you having issues with that. We'll have to ask Seth about that. But also reports of that Dan Gilbert had the plane down in Miami and flying to talk to LeBron. Who knows? LeBron's in Vegas. He's got his basketball tournament. Then he's heading to Brazil for the championship of the World Cup. We'll talk about that later on Sunday. I mean, you know, we have to see if he likes Brazil, Germany, Netherlands, Argentina, who he's rooting for. But this is wild. This is crazy. We got to get into all the different signings. I mean, there have been so many. And I think teams are really making some good moves. I've been impressed. And I'm also surprised. You know, I mean, look, the Blazers, they go ahead and get, you know, a big guy in Chris Kaman, which, you know, they need to back up Lopez. Maybe he could start. You see Spencer Hawes and Jordan Farmar going to the Clippers. We don't know what's going on with the Nets. They get Lionel Hollins today as the coach. You know, they don't know yet from Garnett if he's retiring or Pierce. I don't know. You see the Magic, they get your boy Ben Gordon. What do you think about what the Orlando Magic are doing? Willie Green and Ben Gordon getting shooters.
I guess. Is that their real problem, though? They just need a whole new set of characters. I'm down on Ben Gordon. You know, ever since he signed that big contract in Detroit, I feel like he's checked out. But he's a scorer. He can give you some punch. At best, maybe he's, you know, Vinnie Johnson off the bench for all those old-school Piston fans. So.
And what about your boy, Brooklyn's finest? Not Lance, but Sebastian. Sebastian Telfair signs and doesn't go to China, signs with the Thunder.
Still in the league, giving them some oomph off the bench with Reggie Jackson.
Not bad, not bad. I mean, look, this thing is flying. Free agency is going crazy. I want to see where Dang and Gasol are going to go. I think they're interesting. You know, Devin Harris goes back to Dallas. I mean, you know, there's what the one thing that I think was kind of interesting is that, like, Zabalosha, he goes to the Hawks, leaves. But you have some of these guys re-signing. Gortat goes back to the Wizards, so they stay in pack. We'll see where Trevor Ariza goes. He's going to be a nice play. And you're wondering if Cleveland, Houston, Chicago, or Miami, if they, you know, basically still, you know, keep Melo in and basically do all that, you know. So we'll see. And we're going to, you know, have Seth Davis join us soon. Ray's going to bring him in. I got to tell you, I'm fascinated to see how LeBron and Melo play this out. Do they somehow team up and go to L.A.? With Kobe? I don't know. Anything is possible. Let's see. Carla, you're on the air with Ray and Tay?
Oh, yeah. Hey, it was Tyler from Knicks Tape.
Hey, what's going on, Tyler? What's going on? We're about to have our guest Seth Davis on, but I want to bring you in real quick. What happens with Melo, man?
I don't know if he's going to New York anymore, man. I think L.A. might be his choice now. I mean, I really hope he goes to New York, but what do you guys think?
Well, I got to tell you, I think Melo's coming back.
We got Seth.
Let me put you on pause there, Tyler. We got our guest. Seth, welcome to Ray and Tay. How you doing, buddy? Long time.
Ray and Tay, what's going on, guys?
Oh,
great,
man, you're going
great.
On, Seth. Glad to have you back with us. You're out on the West Coast now, West Side out there with Snoop Dogg. What's going on?
Yeah, that's how I roll. You know, I'm too busy. He's all new.
Yeah. No, it's lying, right?
It's beautiful in the summertime because we don't get the stinking humidity that we used to get back east. So it's a good time and good to have an off season. But you guys pulled me out of my land of obscurity.
Out of the slumber. Listen, you are never obscure, and you're always a great read on Twitter. We got to find out if Ian's going out to the West Coast. What's up with you? Think is Ian going to follow you, Seth, or what?
Ian is actually heading south for warmer climes as well. So
okay.
Everyone's getting out of
smart
New York.
Man.
It sounds like. Man, but life is good.
Great.
Okay.
Great to hear.
So let's jump right into it. We know you probably are following what's going on. You're the college guru, but you know the NBA because you follow these players.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the game and you know it well. If you were to play sort of GM, where would you look in your crystal ball and say, I don't know, LeBron, Bosh, and Melo, where do they wind up, Seth?
I think they're going back to Miami. I think at the end of the day, that's what makes most sense for them competitively as well as financially. You know, I think all those other places offer one or the other, but I don't see anyone out there besides Miami that can offer both. Now, Cleveland is kind of a wild card. I would just be so shocked if LeBron went back to Cleveland after everything that happened. And you know, you have to wonder for LeBron, and I'm a guy who has very much defended him for his decision to go to Miami. I realize that he didn't execute it all that well. I think he's owned that and recovered from that appropriately, but, you know, but I don't know that he wants to be a guy that's just going to change the channel every couple of years in search of a better situation. I mean, I think for him, in terms of his overall presentation to the world, to the degree that this even matters to him, and you can debate whether or not it should, I think it's best for him to stick it out in Miami and get that settled, because the problem they're having right now is they can't go and recruit any other free agents until this is settled. It's the same thing that happened with the Cavaliers the first time around when they were looking for a coach. You know, they were going after Tom Izzo, and Tom Izzo was seriously coming to Cleveland, but, you know, he wasn't going to go to Cleveland unless he knew that LeBron was going to be there. So
yeah.
I think that's where it's headed. None of the other situations that have come up with respect to LeBron makes sense to me, including Cleveland. I think at the end of the day, he goes back to Miami, where my understanding, now they can restructure the contract how they want, but he could be a free agent again next year as well. So to me, that seems is going to be the best option for him.
It just signed
you
the guy,
Melo?
Josh McRoberts today, by the way.
What's that?
They just signed
yeah.
Josh McRoberts today, Miami.
Yeah, I saw
just
that.
Just
well, that's
definitely going to
tip the balance, because I know LeBron all of his life has dreamed of playing with Josh McRoberts.
So wait, follow us, Steph. Be nice, though. But so listen, what about Melo? For the Knicks fans.
They need young legs. In all seriousness, they need young legs.
No, you're right. What about Melo? Does Melo stay in New York?
I would have said at the start of this process, there's no way that Carmelo goes to New York. You know, to me, the main reason to leave New York is the owner. And to me, every organization reflects the person at the top. Now, if there's anyone who can insert himself and insert some sanity and sound judgment between an owner and an organization, obviously somebody of Phil Jackson's stature, because he doesn't need the job. You know, if he doesn't have the authority that he needs to do his job the way he sees fit, he can walk out the door, and that would be a disaster for Dolan. So, and again, if you look at it competitively and financially, now I would think that Chicago is a very attractive situation for Carmelo. If I were him, that's probably where I would go. You don't know about Derrick Rose, but you've got to figure he's going to be an effective NBA player, if not maybe as good as he was before all these injuries. But the Lakers make absolutely no sense to me, and we don't need the real estate competition out here, believe me. So, but to me, New York, the other thing about New York is, you know, if he stays, my understanding is they're going to have a ton of cap room next year to go out and get some players around him. So,
right.
You know, to me, it's a much more viable option than I would have thought going into this process. I still think Chicago's the place to beat, but I would think at this point New York is a pretty close second, with the Lakers a distant third.
So, Seth, let me ask you this. You know, we love talking the NBA draft, and you know all these players. What did you think about this hyped-up draft, how it all played out, maybe some winners, some players that didn't get picked that you were surprised? What did you think overall where this draft could be in maybe 10 years?
Well, you know, I thought it pretty much played out according to the script. You know, there were a couple of variations. Right. I was a little bit surprised to see Julius Randle still around at 7. You know, to see Shabazz Napier go as late as he did was a mild surprise, not a huge one, and it ended up going, you know, where I think he wanted to be. I think we're going to look back 10 years from now and say this is a really good draft. I mean, I don't know that there are any LeBrons or slash Durants are in there, but there might be. You know, there might be. It's a little early to tell. I mean, I don't think we knew at this stage in the process that LeBron and Durant were going to be LeBron and Durant. I mean, we thought that we knew, but a lot of times we think that we know. And then, of course, to me, the big wild card here is Joel Embiid, who, you know, I don't know if he is injury prone. I certainly would have been quite concerned with his physical ability to handle an 82-game season with his size and frame. But certainly in terms of his talent level, I think he could be, you know, a perennial all-star type of talent. So, I mean, I think you've got a few guys in this draft who I think are, you know, could be consistent all-stars. And, you know, to me, that's obviously, you know, an indication of the caliber of a draft. And the other thing that kept coming to mind, by the way, you know, I was doing a lot of pre-draft work and talking to teams and talking to scouts. The thing that kept coming back, which struck me, is that this is a very high-character draft. When you're talking about Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker, Joel Embiid, Marcus Smart, Julius Randle. I mean, I think these are guys of a very high caliber in terms of what they've got between their ears. And a lot of times that's where careers are made or broken. So I think we're going to look back several years from now and feel like this was a really, really good draft.
Well, that's an interesting point. Nobody really talked about the character, but now that you mention it, makes a lot of sense. Let me ask you about the top of the draft specifically, because you know, before Julius Randle got hurt, you really thought that they were 4, and maybe if Dante Exum's part of that, maybe 5 guys that could potentially, you know, really change a franchise. But let's focus on your guy, Jabari Parker from Duke, and Andrew Wiggins. And, you know, to me, Jabari Parker's the most NBA-ready, and then everybody says that potentially Wiggins has the better, you know, upside just because of his unnatural physical ability, you know, a la Grant Hill or somebody that you know pretty well. So what do you think about specifically about those two and their NBA prospects? And then specifically in Milwaukee, your guy Parker in Milwaukee, and then Wiggins in Cleveland, let's say without LeBron. I mean, what kind of prospects do you have for those guys?
Well, it's kind of like you guys, you know, when you get up in the morning, you got to make a very hard decision. You're going to drive the Benz to work or you're going to drive a Lamborghini, you know. I mean, I know it stresses you out every day that you get out of bed. So, you know, to me, you can almost flip a coin between these two guys. I mean, I will say that, you know, we can, I think, get overly infatuated by quote-unquote athleticism. You know, a guy's ability to run fast and jump high, which are certainly two very valuable attributes to take onto a basketball court, but are not the only valuable attributes to take to a basketball court. I would have taken Jabari Parker with the number one pick. That doesn't make me right, but to me, he's a better basketball player.
I agree.
Now, Andrew Wiggins had the ability at times, you know, to go for 40 when that was called upon, but he's not a guy who is naturally a self-starter every day in the gym. He could grow into that now. He's not a guy who particularly enjoys the media limelight. He's not, like, you know, overly shy. He's not a recluse, but you know, he's a nice kid. To me, I wonder a little bit about the alpha male and being the center of attention. I don't know that he's had, you know, anything particularly interesting to say. Again, that's not necessarily a reflection of his character, but, you know, to me, Jabari Parker has always been a fascinating person. Forget about him as a player. He's an interesting kid, and he thinks on a level. You know, I compare him to Kyrie Irving in that regard because, you know, I made the comment, you know, when Kyrie Irving went first in the draft, I said, here's a guy who's the number one overall pick of the draft. He's being underrated because of his thought process and character, and I'd been around him, and that proved to be the case. So, you know, to me, Jabari Parker, you know, the only thing that people, you know, certainly defensively, Wiggins is going to be better than Parker, but Wiggins is going to be better than 95% of the NBA from day one anyway. And I always felt like people tried to knock Parker's athleticism, again, only because I thought, you know, he failed in comparison to Andrew Wiggins. But all I know is whenever someone, you know, threw the ball to the top of the square, Jabari could go get it. You know, you don't
definitely
get, you know, 30 to 30, 35 points in a high-level college game, which he did a number of times without being a great athlete. So, like I said, I think both of those guys are all-stars. I understand the allure of someone like Andrew Wiggins, that he's so good athletically. But to me, you know, they don't call it running ball. They don't call it jumping ball. They don't call it defense ball. They call it basketball. And for a guy to go and get you buckets, Jabari Parker, I think, can do that as well, if not better, than anybody else in the draft.
No, I would agree with that. Hey, listen, Seth, what about somebody who's off the radar? I mean, this draft was so deep that I thought in the second round you had some very interesting picks. Is there anybody you have your eye on maybe in the second round, or maybe even somebody that didn't get drafted that could potentially make a positive impact on an NBA roster?
Well, a couple of guys come to mind. I mean, first of all, Cle Anthony Early out of Wichita State, which I guess he went to the Knicks in the second round, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, that to me, I love that kid. I love his motor.
He's a baller.
He's exactly right. He's a player. What position? What is he? He's a player. Let him figure it out. I subscribe to the belief that there's only two positions in basketball, on the court and off the court. And his position is on the court. Let him figure it out. Now, he's maybe not a pure shooter stroker like you'd like him to be at the three position, but, you know, athletically he can defend right away, and he's got a great competitive motor, and he's a scorer. He's a scorer, as is T.J. Warren. I know he went a little higher
in the first round.
Yeah, out here with me, the Phoenix, the Suns.
Yeah, which it was a solid pick. Now, the other guy who I think, if I'm not mistaken, went in the first round, you guys got to correct me, Joe Harris from Virginia. I think he ended up going in the first round, or may have been early second.
He went in the second, but to Cleveland, and I think that's he's a great player. You know, I've heard you speak about him often.
You know,
he's solid.
I mean, I agree. I mean, the thing about Joe Harris is people don't realize how big he is. He's 6'5", legit, and he's a very good athlete. He's a pure shooter as well as a good scorer. So he's a shooter and a scorer, which is a terrific combination. His numbers at Virginia were not great this year compared to his junior year. He came into the season, many people picked him to be ACC Player of the Year, and when they lost a couple of games early in the season, everybody kind of changed their role. So he sublimated his offense for the sake of the team, and look what the team did. They won the ACC regular season, they won the ACC tournament, and they were number one seed in the NCAA tournament, went to the Sweet 16 and fought Michigan State to the wire.
Right, and they were a defensive team.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, you know, to me, he's a guy who, if he had been in another system, for example, like Doug McDermott had at Creighton, I'm not saying he's as good as McDermott, but if he had been in a system that was designed to get him a lot of points, he would have scored a lot more points, probably would have been picked higher in the draft, but maybe not be quite as ready to have an impact at the NBA. So he's a guy I would watch out for as far as, you know, being a better pro than people are anticipating.
So let me ask you this, touching still on the draft, who, maybe outside of Parker, and maybe that's just your pick, but who's going to be the rookie of the year? Who do you think will get the opportunity, and who will fulfill that opportunity to be rookie of the year in the NBA?
Well, again, I would pick Jabari because not only is he the most ready now, I mean, I think that's a little bit of an easier answer than saying who's going to have the best long-term NBA career. I think Jabari Parker is the most ready to, you know, to be an NBA player right now, next season. And, of course, he's walking into a situation where he's going to a bad team. So they're going to need him to do a lot. Now, maybe he's not going to have as much help as he would like to have. But you know, I think you know, Doug McDermott is another guy who has a chance to you know, be a high impact type of rookie because he can really score the basketball. So a lot of it, you know, depends on team need and you know, what is happening from there. But you know, it's just very unusual for a rookie to come in and play a lot and score a lot. You guys know this. You follow the NBA closer than I do. If you look at this year's draft class, the last couple of years, you know, there really aren't that many. You can count them on one hand, really, the guys who came in as rookies and really had a very high impact. So I don't think they're going to be more than, you know, four or five guys, even in this class, as good as it is, that are going to come in and be able to start and be able to, you know, average, you know, better than 15 points a game. So I think Jabari Parker is going to be on a very short list of guys who are going to come in as rookies and have an impact right away.
Yeah, rarely do you have a 19, 20-year-old guy who's that talented offensively. And,
right.
Yeah, he's got a lot to offer inside and outside. Hey, Seth, let me ask you this. I've got a copy of your book sitting right here. I just got it as a present, so I'll admit that I haven't read it, you know, cover to cover yet. But tell us a little bit about it.
That also means you didn't buy it.
No, somebody bought it for me as a present.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got it as a present.
I'd rather you buy it and not read it.
Okay, well, somebody bought it. It was bought. Put it like this. It was bought. My wife
bought it.
Okay, so
that's good. That's good.
It was definitely bought. No plagiarism here. So tell us a little bit about Coach Wooden writing that book and what that meant, you know, what that process was like and what that meant to you.
Well, it was I appreciate you asking. It was a long process. It took me about 4 years and change to produce it and a lot of research, obviously a lot of writing. It's a pretty thick book, but it is, you know, it is the fullest and most balanced accounting of this man's life. You know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, what it was about John Wooden that made me want to write the book, you know, a guy who'd been written about so much. And you know, people say, well, there's so many books about John Wooden. How is yours going to be different? And my answer is, you know, there have been a lot of books written by John Wooden, with John Wooden, and for John Wooden. But this is the first book in a very long time that was written about John Wooden that delved into his life from the perspective of a historian and a journalist to really tell the true story of his life in all its full contours. It's not any kind of takedown by any stretch, but it is very much a balanced portrayal. He was not a perfect man. He did not live a perfect life. People have sort of presented him as this two-dimensional figure, you know, never had a flaw, never had a bad day. Nobody criticized him, and that's not real life. So I set out to write about that third dimension, you know, his competitiveness. He was he had a very controversial reputation as far as his treatment of referees. At one point was almost censured by the California basketball writers because of not only talking to referees but also to opposing players. He was not always held in high regard personally by his peers. They found him a little aloof and distant. He preferred to stay with his family and sanctimonious. They called him St. John. That was not considered a compliment. You know, his players, while they played for him, oftentimes found him emotionally unavailable. They respected him and admired his ability to teach basketball, but were unable to connect with him on a personal level, and many of them left their experience playing for him you know, with feelings of ambivalence, if not outright hostility toward him, especially if he was, if they were one of the players who didn't play. Funny about that correlation. And then finally, there's the specter of Sam Gilbert, who is sort of oft talked about, but a lot of fans don't know about him. But he was a very wealthy UCLA booster, a real estate developer who, over the course of many years, while John Wooden was the coach, passed favors along to his players that were in direct violation of NCAA rules. Wooden may not have known all of the details about it, but he certainly knew, Sam knew what was going on, and at a certain point had to make an active decision not to look further. And that doesn't exactly jibe with the, you know, image that we have of John Wooden as his paragon of integrity. So, you know, as I said, he was not a perfect man, and he did not live a perfect life, but he was an extraordinary man, and he lived an extraordinary life. So this is the fullest, I believe, presentation of this man's life.
Well, good for you. That's great.
Yeah, no, I think that, see, and that's sort of, I think, what we need. I think right now society can get a little Pollyanna with people and put on the white gloves.
Right.
We know Bill Walton loves him to death. Obviously he would, you know, he played for him, but you kind of want the truth, and I think the truth is always the right side to go on. I got to ask you this, man. We got to have some fun with you because, you know, when you were on our show,
yeah,
you talked about your days at Duke last time and your good buddy Grant Hill. Got to give you props. You and Grant Hill and Steve Smith, you know, Matt Leinart, the sort of maybe the B team doing the tournament and maybe a little bit more informative. I'll give you the props for that. Your show on True TV and all that. What was it like working with, you know, someone that is sort of obviously you've known for years and a friend, and it was Grant and Steve Smith sort of their first year together with you. Tell us a little insight to the studio and watching all those games and the upsets. What's it like, and how was it?
Well, it beats the hell out of working for a living, I can tell you that.
God, I know that.
Even further back with Grant Hill, which very few people realize, is the fact that my father went to college with Grant's dad, Calvin Hill, who, of course, was a great running back at Yale. And my father, I'm still not sure how this happened, but ended up in the fraternity where a lot of the football players were in. So Grant's dad and my dad were fraternity brothers long before they ever got around to procreating. So, you know, Grant and I were able to connect at Duke. He was 2 years behind me, so we overlapped then. And it was funny because, you know, I had this little cable TV show down at Duke called Cameron Corner, which I started, and Grant was good enough to come on and be a guest a couple of times. So, you know, I hadn't really crossed paths a lot with Grant since Duke. You know, he was doing his MBA thing, and I'd see him from time to time, and but we hadn't really had a chance to spend a lot of time together. So to have that time again was just really neat. And he's the one who called down to Duke and had his mom call down to Duke and got the tape of me and him on the student TV station.
Nice.
20-some-odd years ago, which was really, you know, he said we should do this, and I never got around to it. And by the time I started poking around, he had already gotten the tape. So he's a better
That's
reporter
cool.
than I am, no surprise. But, you know, he's a wonderful guy, as you would expect. Steve
yeah.
Smith is, I call him my brother from another mother. He's just a wonderful guy. And same thing with Matt. I mean, we're all friends. And one thing that I've learned, guys, and you guys know this doing what you do, is chemistry is not something that you can flip on when the lights to the camera comes on. It's got to be there all the time. And,
Amen.
You know, television works best, or radio or podcasting works best, when the viewer or listener feels like they've accidentally wandered into a conversation that's been going on for a long time. And
exactly.
You know, shoot, if you can't have fun now, you're not sleeping. You know, but good thing about Smitty is he's into green juicing like I am, so he always makes sure I have plenty of juice when I get to Atlanta.
And he makes you put on the Sparty helmet or what?
Yeah, well, you know, I know we haven't gone that far, but I don't think he wants to put it on me. I don't think that's a good look for me. I don't think he thinks that's a good look for the helmet. Nothing to do with me. I think he feels like the helmet should be on me. I'm not worthy of it.
Oh, that's funny.
Listen, like I said, if you can't have fun doing that, then you got something seriously wrong with you.
Hey, Seth, we'll get you out of here. We don't want to take up too much of your time. We love it when you join us, and we'd love to have you on again. But let me ask you on this note, what
yeah.
teams or which players should we be looking out for this upcoming year in the for the NCAA season? I mean, who are the top five?
Who's your top five preseason? Come
on, top five teams or players? Somebody that we should keep an eye on, and maybe a sleeper.
Well, you're going to get a lot of the usual suspects. The one team that is going to take the biggest leap forward in terms of people's expectations from a year ago is Texas. They had a really good season last year where they were very, very young, freshman and sophomore dominated team. They didn't lose anybody to the NBA. They didn't lose any bad transfers. And they have a very good recruiting class coming in, including a player you probably have heard of named Miles Turner.
Yeah.
I think he's from Texas, if I'm not mistaken. But he's a very dynamic he may be 7 feet by now, but he's 6'10", 6'11", can step in, can play by the basket, but he can step away from the basket. He's not as good as Kevin Garnett probably, but he's in that type of mold. And to me, he's going to be the final piece for them. But, besides that, the main two at the top, shockingly enough, are going to be Duke and Kentucky. I would have had Duke as my preseason number one, except Kentucky's guys mostly came back.
The big guys, especially the front court.
Yeah, Cauley Stein and Akari. I thought all these guys were going to, and the Harrison twins came back, which surprised me. So they only
surprised
lost
me too.
James Young and Julius Randle. So, we think of Kentucky as the young one and done team, but, if they stepped on the court today, they would probably put out a starting five that had no freshmen. They have a great
loaded
class coming in. It's not quite of the level of last year, but a very solid freshman class coming in. But Duke has a really good freshman class too.
Yeah, Okafor is nice, huh?
Back, Jahlil Okafor is. Have you seen him play
with tape? I mean, we've
yeah,
been seeing
him
for 2 years. We've been looking at this kid.
Yeah, he's going to be nice.
He's Jared Sellinger plus 3 inches. He's got that big
with
body.
A good back. With a good back.
Yeah, exactly. Knock wood. But I think he goes 6'11", 270, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a pretty fit. Ironically, now I wrote a story about him and Tyus Jones because very early on in the recruiting process they said they were going to be a package deal. And people didn't think they'd follow through with it, but it's a really nice story because one kid's from Minnesota, one kid's from Chicago, and through USA Basketball they just became really good friends, and they said, "Well, why don't we play together?" And it's a really nice friendship. So I got to know him a little bit, his family a little bit, his AU coaches a little bit, and I would text him once in a while. He's a really nice kid, but then I saw him. I was flying back from the NBA Draft Combine back to L.A., and he was out here because he was part of some show that they were – he was taking some prom date. Some girl to prom that the TV show had set it up. But he looked really chiseled. I mean, he looked really slimmed up. He's done a good job with his body. Highly, highly skilled. So Duke will be there. Kentucky will be there. As I said, Texas. I think Louisville is going to be real good again. They got Montrezl Harrell back. And the other one, by the way, which is going to be really good, is Wisconsin. They'd probably be my third choice right now. They only lost one
Frank
kid.
Frank the Tank.
Frank the Tank is back. And then the last team I'll throw, again, a lot of the usual suspects, Arizona, is going to be really, really good.
So they'll just reload? They lost a couple of starters in Gordon and Johnson.
Stanley Johnson is coming back and is a freshman coming in.
Yes,
and he's a real scorer. Aaron Gordon, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson last year, good freshman, but not necessarily natural scorers.
And Brandon Ashley, I guess, will be healthy next year.
I was going to say, well, they didn't have him last year. And by the way, if they had Brandon Ashley, they were going to win the national championship.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
That was a devastating blow for them. So he comes back. And they bring a lot of guys, T.J. McConnell, back, so they're going to be solid again. So you guys are getting my juices flowing, man. I can't wait for the season to start now.
It's going to be fun. Hey, Seth, so real quick, though, I got to say this. I got a pet peeve, and I always say this to Ray, and it's just one of Tay's pet peeves. It gets me pissed off. When I see the draft, and you got all these European kids that are 2 years away from 2 years being away, and they're not going to come to the NBA, and you've got good USA college basketball players that don't get drafted, like a Patrick Young, James Michael McAdoo, DeAndre Kane, Melvin Ejim.
Melvin Ejim, yeah.
Yeah, what do you feel about that? Because to me, I think it's – I don't want to say it's unfair because I got a chance in summer league and maybe get to training camp to make the team, but it's almost – it's getting ridiculous. These kids should be getting drafted, not some guy that's never going to even set foot in our country.
Let me ask you a question as long as you're on your rant. If you were running an NBA team, would you want the best American player or would you want the best player?
The best player.
I agree with you. I'd want the best player.
Okay.
And I would say, you know what, seeing some kid in some third-level quality talent compared to a C.J. Fair who hit big shots, a big-time bucket maker in heavy competition in Syracuse, I'll take C.J. Fair. And I hope he makes the Dallas Mavericks. I hope Edgem makes the Spurs. Kane makes the Lakers. I would take those guys.
Well, the point is that you would not make a choice out of sentimentality. You would player.
But I think what we're saying is at times, the unknown, it's almost like if you play for 4 years in the ACC or C.J. Fair's case, they pick you apart, and if you're 18 or 19 years old and you play in Croatia, you play in France, and they have three, four games of tape on you, then they haven't really revealed your flaws. So there's almost a bias towards, well, we know the American kids' flaws, and we don't know much about these European kids, we don't know as much. I shouldn't say that they don't scout, but we don't know as much about them, so let's give them the nod.
Well, let's take the American versus international player out of the equation, and I will agree with you in the sense of known versus unknown. And what you see more often in my world, I cover college basketball, is the young player as opposed to the senior. If Aaron Gordon was a senior and he was a 42% free throw shooter as he was last year, people would be assume that's what he's going to be the rest of his life.
Patrick Young.
I think Aaron Gordon's obviously a lot better than Patrick.
No, of course. I'm saying a shooter as a senior,
shooting. Yeah, that's exactly right. When someone gets to be a senior, Adrian Payne, is kind of the same thing. That they draft on potential, and the idea is that if you're younger, you have more potential. And I think oftentimes the scouts and GMs and guys that I talk to, they recognize the fallacy of this, but that is what they do. So I think it's a good point. I hadn't really thought of it in terms of maybe applying the same thing to a European player. But again, I think it has more to do with how young he is. I mean, Dante Exum's a really young kid. Now, whether this guy Sarge that the Sixers picked up, they're going to have to wait on him a couple of years. He may be worth the wait. He may be that good. I would say that these guys are professionals and they keep their eye on the international game. They travel over there. If they're going to draft someone, they've seen them a lot. It's not like, hey, we don't know anything about them. Let's just believe me. No one is running the dice, rolling the dice. If anything, I think they may even overanalyze this stuff and get too much information on these players because at the end of the day, it really
is. But their track record, Seth. I mean, let's be honest. Frederick Weiss and all these different. I mean, for every Tony Parker and Ginobili, there's triple, quadruple of European guys that don't ever come, don't make it, and don't have the game. So
that's part of the risk. But there are a lot of international guys. I mean, with Dirk Nowitzki and Serge Ibaka. I mean, there are a lot of international guys who are very, very good basketball players. And the Americans, I think realize this, and I think it's a big reason why a lot of kids that you would assume would come out of the draft are actually going back to school more often than you might anticipate based on their draft position, because I think they're understanding that just because you get drafted at a certain level doesn't mean you're ready to stick. So not only are you competing with guys who are already in the league and don't much feel like having an 18, 19-year-old kid take their dinner away from them, but you're also competing with an entire world. Basketball is very much a global game, and if you're not ready to play, just because you're drafted a certain place is no guarantee past your first contract that you're going to be around.
That's right. No, you're definitely right. Seth, thanks. I know we kept you long, but we appreciate it.
Great
and
talking,
let's get you back during the season.
Pleasure.
Have a great summer.
Appreciate all the time, Seth.
Okay.
Take care. Enjoy your summer.
Seth Davis from CBS Sports and Sports Illustrated breaks down the draft, college hoops, free agency. That was fun, Ray. Awesome. So real quick, talk to me. I don't know if you want to do a little bit more NBA real quick. You got any predictions?
I think we're good.
Nah, Bosh.
Got,
Yeah, maybe Bosch goes to the Rockets. We'll see. It's all going to play out. We'll be back Friday. World Cup, we got 3 out of 4 right in the semifinals. We both had Spain making the semifinals instead of the Netherlands. Netherlands are there. Can the Netherlands take care of Argentina? What are your thoughts with that?
They can, but I don't think they will. I think that Robin and Van Persie, when they're both on the same team, and those two strikers and forwards there are really good, and I like the way that they're playing. They were very aggressive against Costa Rica. They went down, it went down to the end, but really they dominated offensively. And if they can do, if they can play the same way against Argentina, they may be able to score 2-3 goals. But I think Argentina is just itching to get to that final. And if it's
Messi,
it would be great for
my pick.
For
that's
South
Tay's
American
pick, remember.
Football.
Tay picked it, Argentina. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to do it. But the sad thing is, though, with Neymar getting a knee to the back on the other side, won't be able to play against Germany, fractured vertebrae. Does that sort of put Brazil in such a bad position that they, you know, they're going to have to change how they play a little bit? You know, they're working their lineup, you know, seeing if they're going to, you know, add another striker or get more of a midfielder. We'll see. But I think now, unfortunately,
well, I think that plus Thiago Silva being out,
well, yeah,
getting
he's
a second yellow card, and they appealed, and they were
that
shut
hurt.
Down on that appeal.
Yeah.
So you take Neymar and Silva out of the lineup.
That's a lot.
I got to tell you what, I think Germany,
I
got to think Germany's going to win this game, even if it's in Brazil.
I do too. Yeah. It's going to, but you know what, one thing will be, it is going to be passionate, exciting. These are two, I think for a lot of the U.S. fans, maybe they've checked out, but if they're still around, they're going to see some great soccer, some great football, because I think these matchups, look, the Netherlands have been so close so many years, right? They're dying to win one. And, you know, and I think, you know, even in Vegas, they all have, you know, almost even chances for all, any of the four to win. And I think, you know, you might get Germany, you know, European against a South American championship, Germany against Argentina. Originally, I had Brazil, Argentina, without Neymar. So you got to go with Germany. So, and then obviously, we'll next, what, Sunday is the final. Tuesday and Wednesday are the games. That's going to be, you got to watch. I felt bad for Costa Rica, though. They played their hearts out, you know.
They
even
played
though
great, but the problem is they were pretty inept on offense. So it was pretty great defensive, and their goalie was the player of the match, right? So he was the best player on the pitch that day. But you still need some offense. And I think that even though Holland, you know, had to go down to the end, they were the better team. They were more aggressive, and they probably deserved to win. But let's switch over to baseball real quick. We've got our All-Star game next week. They announced the All-Star starters, starting with your boy, Derek Jeter.
They're going to honor him on the field, Ray. In Minnesota, they're going to do something special like they did for Mariano. I really think that they're going to do something nice. So let's look at the American League lineup. What do you think? You got 3 Orioles. What do you think about
that team? Is just stacked. So you've got Perez, Cabrera, Cano, Josh Donaldson at third, who's having a great year. Jeter, Batista, Trout, Jones, and by the way, your DH is Nelson Cruz. So the American League team is absolutely stacked. So having said that, it comes down in these games a lot of times to pitching. And the National League pitchers, we were saying this off air, they may have the 4 best pitchers on their team, right? If you look at who's doing work this year, it's Wainwright, it's Wainwright, Greinke, Cueto, and Kershaw. And they're all on the National League squad.
Kershaw's on fire. Oh, we got to mention, though, Jeff Samardzija got traded to the A's, so that was a good pickup. And they also got Hamo, so they give it the young shortstop. But the A's have 5 of the top 32 pitchers. They're going for the series this year. So props to Oakland. Let's look at the NL lineup real quick. Read off the NL lineup. Benji Molina.
Yadier Molina. Your boy Paul Goldschmidt, first-time starter for
Arizona.
A Diamondback. You got Utley. You got Aramis Ramirez, first-time starter at third for a Brewer. And then you've got Troy Tulowitzki, Andrew McCutchen, former DH, Carlos Gomez, who might right now be the NL MVP from Milwaukee, carrying that team, and the ephemeral one, Yasiel Puig.
Puig, yes, sir. It's going to be fun.
For a starting role, and he's a starter. He deserves it.
Don't forget Cano made it for the American League, too. We got to mention Cano's there. Your boy, though, off the bench, Abreu's there. I like that, from the White Sox. He's and Tanaka made it, so two Yankees. And for our Met fans, who made it for the Mets?
Daniel Murphy, the guy
Murphy made it.
Catching so much flack over the years for just being an offensive player, they had to basically find him a position at second base. And he is the Mets representative in the All-Star game. How crazy is that?
Definitely. So we'll be back Friday, probably a regular time, 5 p.m., talking some more World Cup, preview the finals, and NBA free agency. Great show. Seth Davis was amazing. Ray and Tate Today, the Urban Daily. Check us out at theurbandaily.com, rayandtatetoday.com. Follow us on Twitter at Ray and Tate Today. Great show, Ray.
We're out. Thanks for listening. Had a great time.
Peace.
Okay, here I come, hip-hop's number one son. What truth be told, I'm more like a younger...